Progress is good. I believe in our work here we're seeing progress on a regular basis. Some of you can remember when the education building was built. Most of us can remember when this building was built. We're thankful now that we are able to renovate the auditorium and make progress in that way. I wish that each one of you had an opportunity to be here in the office in this area for an entire week and see what goes on in this building. Most of you have no idea. There are a lot of people from the community who come to this building on a regular basis. There are some who come, especially if it's raining, and walk in the building. Someone asked this morning what this thing over here looks like an abacus is. It takes 18 trips around this room to make a mile. And there are 18 little things that can be slid across on that so that people can keep up with how far they've walked. That's what that is. Compliments of Carlton Morton. We have a lot of kids from the community that come to this building on a regular basis. And only God knows the good that is being done. And I'm just thankful that we have a place like this that we can meet under the circumstances of this morning. I appreciate so much all the positive comments that have been made in the last week about our study of last Sunday morning. And a few minutes ago, I dropped into the contribution plate 8 checks and several bills. I don't know exactly, I think close to $2,000 that had been mailed to us or handed to me this week by people who said, I'm going to be out of town Sunday, but I want to have a part in our special contribution for our building fund. And I just want you to know, as Barry expressed appreciation for the elders a few minutes ago, how much I appreciate that in a personal way also. One other thing happened this week that I want to share with you. I was talking with one of our members on telephone, a member who, because of a situation, is unable to attend every service. And this person said, you know, in the last few weeks, because of things we've been studying, I have sat down and really taken inventory of my life and looked at my attitude toward things, especially toward material things. And I am more determined than I've ever been before to put God first. Now, folks, that's really the kind of growth that we want to see. In fact, I'm convinced that if we can have the spiritual growth, that the other kind of growth will take care of itself. And if we don't have that kind of spiritual growth, it doesn't really matter what else we do anyway. Because everything that we do here ought to be done to help us to get closer to God, closer to one another and encouraging each other, and especially to grow spiritually. We see growth physically. We have visitors at every service. We're so glad that you are here. We see new members coming. We see a lot of things happening. But all of that is insignificant, really, compared to our growth spiritually. And let's be sure that we do everything that we can to grow in a spiritual way. In talking about growth, as we are in this series of lessons, it's almost impossible to discuss that without going to the 4th chapter of Ephesians. I believe if I had to take one chapter, and from that chapter was asked to preach for an entire year, that I might very well select the 4th chapter of Ephesians. It's amazing how much is in that one chapter. This morning, as we talk about growing up into Him, a statement that's mentioned in verse 15, we're going to be concentrating on verses 11 through 16. But I want you to notice with me first that in the earlier part of the chapter, he's emphasizing the importance of doctrine. He says, there is one body and one spirit, even as you're called, and one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all. Those famous 7 ones are there emphasizing that it's important for us to be right with God. But now turn over to the latter part of the chapter, and I want you to notice what he emphasizes from about verse 25 on down. Verse 25 talks about putting away lying. Verse 26 treats anger. Verse 28 talks about working with one's hand and having a benevolent attitude toward other people. Verse 29 talks about one's speech. Do not let corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but speak the things that are edifying one to another. Verse 31, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you, and all malice. Talking about attitudes. Be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. It's interesting to me that in the first part of this chapter, he emphasizes the idea of doctrine and being right with God and being sure that we do what God wants us to. But in the latter part of the chapter, he emphasizes the right attitude, as we were talking a moment ago of how important attitude is. And really, if one took those verses from verse 25 down through 32 and applied them in life, it would make him a fine Christian gentleman or a fine Christian lady, applying those principles, those qualities of life that are so important. Now, right in the middle of this, in between emphasizing the oneness of God and Christ and faith and the church and so on, and emphasizing the importance of the qualities of spiritual growth and behavior, right in the middle of this, he really gives us a pattern for growth in the church, beginning in verse 11. In verse 11, he says he gave some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and some pastors and teachers. It is important in the first place that we understand the word pastor there is the word that is synonymous with elder. He's talking about the elders in that particular place. He's talking about preachers, evangelists, as he uses the word evangelist. But what I want you to see in this verse is that we need to accept our differences that we have as far as abilities are concerned, and as far as responsibilities are involved in the work of the church. He gave different positions, you might say. Sometimes we talk about different offices in the church. The word office is really not the word that we need. It's not an idea of holding an office. And I really struggle to find the word that I want to use, but let's use the word position. He's given us different positions in the work of the church. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, he describes the body and talks about the different parts of the body. But notice also here that these positions are different. And notice also that not one person holds every position. This may be one of the most important lessons that we can learn. God doesn't expect you to do everything. He doesn't expect me to do everything. No one is qualified to do everything that needs to be done in the work of the church. And it may very well be sometimes that we become frustrated when we think we've got to be involved in every program that's going on, in everything that is happening. Now, of course, I would encourage us to be involved as much as possible. And I like to be involved personally in as many things as possible, especially if there's eating involved. But you know, it's not possible for any one of us to be involved in everything, and God does not expect any of us to be involved in everything. He said he gave some apostles there in the early part of the church. He gave some prophets. Prophet is one who speaks for God, a teacher. In our time, the word teacher might very well be put in there. He gave some evangelists. Not everyone needs to be a pulpit preacher. Not everyone needs to be a missionary. Some are better equipped for that than others. And he gave some pastors and teachers. He gave some the ability and the opportunity to be elders in the church, to carry out the responsibility of leadership. Not long ago, I was talking to some people in a congregation where I had conducted a gospel meeting, I believe, last year. They're in the process of finding a new preacher. But in the conversation, that which kept coming up again and again was, what we need is good leadership. What we need is good leadership. That is so important in the work of the church. And when we bring this principle here of understanding our differences and our different responsibilities in the church down to today, we need to recognize the importance of our elders and their responsibility not only to give an account for themselves, but an account for every one of us. That's an awesome responsibility. We need to emphasize what the Bible says about our deacons. I'm not for sure that there is a more important group in this congregation than our deacons. Each deacon must be functioning in the area where the elders have assigned him and asked him to work. He needs to be looking for ways to become more involved. In fact, as our deacons become more involved, our elders will have more time to spend to what is their number one responsibility, and that is shepherding the flock. Those of us who preach and teach from the pulpit in our classes, we have a responsibility. We also have an opportunity to prepare and to be ready. And we'll not know this side of the judgment how many people we are affecting, how many people we are helping to turn closer to God and to be involved more in the study of God's Word. But we need to understand that in these different positions and works in the church, that no one of us is going to be able to do them all. It takes all of us doing what he can do and what she can do. And that we are different in that sense. Verses 12 and 13 in this passage emphasize that we need to understand our challenges. There are challenges before us. In the King James Version, from which I am reading, there seems to be three basic ideas in verse 12. Number one, perfecting the saints, helping the saints to mature. Number two, the work of the ministry, serving, reaching out, helping others. That's what the word ministry means. And number three, the edifying of the body of Christ. And then in the next verse, unity is emphasized. So if we look at it in this sense and think of four different ideas that are involved in accepting the challenges before us, he says, number one, we need to help us all as Christians mature. We need to serve in every way that we can. We need to encourage and edify one another, and we need to work for unity in the Lord's church. Those are the challenges that are before us. In another version, it is translated in such a way that the first of these two go together, that we are to mature the saints in order to help them to do the work of the ministry. And in yet another version, the indication is that all three of these go together and one builds upon the other, something like this, that you mature the saints in order to be able to minister, in order to be able to edify. And I don't think it makes any difference which way it is translated, because they are all there together. Whether they were intended to build upon each other or stand side by side, we have the same end results. And the challenges before us, as we are interested in growing, is, number one, helping all of us as Christians to become more mature. You remember the meat, milk situation of Hebrews 5? We need the milk, but we need to be able to go on and add the meat. We need to mature. Number two, we need to be sure that we understand our basic purpose is to reach out and help others. Jesus went about doing good. That's what Christianity is about. And we need to encourage and edify one another. We need to learn to find the good things in each other and talk to people, not about people. Talk to the face, not to the back. And then in all of that, he says, till we come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God. Maturity, service, edification, unity. All four of those ideas are there that give us the challenge that is before us. And then in verses 14 and 15, he sort of suggests to us that we need to know our game plan. Now I want you to notice that in these two verses we have defense and offense. Some of you that are in the audience this morning are coaches. And many of you are parents of younger ones that play on football, baseball, basketball teams, and so forth. You are well aware that if you have a team that has good defense and no offense, you may not win. If you have one that has a good offense and no defense, you may not win. And the same principle applies when we're talking about growth in the church. Look first of all at verse 14, that we henceforth be no more children, tossed to and fro, and especially notice this, carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive. I believe he's suggesting there, folks, that we do need to be concerned about false doctrine, false teachers, and that we do need to be ready to defend the truth, to give an answer for the reason of the hope that is within us, 1 Peter 3 and verse 15, to be able to try the spirits to see whether they're of God, 1 John 4 and verse 1. We need to be aware of what is being taught. And our elders, more than anyone else, need to be aware of what is being taught and what is being understood by the congregation particularly, and maybe to some extent know what's going on in other places in order to be able to defend the truth. We need to be ready to stand up and defend the truth. But folks, we need to also have an offense. And I believe that's what's indicated in verse 15. It would be easy to let verse 15 just go along with 14 and say, oh, that's talking about defending the truth, speaking the truth, always be ready to answer people, and if they teach something that's wrong, be ready to show them what the truth is. But I believe there's more to it than that in verse 15. Speaking the truth in love. And then he qualifies it, tells us what he's talking about. To help us to grow up into him in all things, which is the head, even Christ. speaking the truth, that's what needs to be taught in love. That's the attitude that we need. And I've said several times that Ephesians 4:15 may be the golden text of the Bible for preachers. Speaking the truth in love. May grow up into him in all things. That means there's got to be some offensive work done in the Lord's church. We could spend all of our time just meeting error and talking about what's wrong and standing up for the truth in that sense and never grow. In fact, it has been my observation down through the years that when congregations get to the point that they spend most of their time just defending the truth, that they begin to slide backwards. I get two church bulletins. I've been getting them now for years, and I don't know that I can remember a bulletin that has come from either one of those places but that there was something in it negative about what's going on in the brotherhood that's wrong. Now, there may be times that we need to inform ourselves about something that's wrong. There may be times that an article would be appropriate. But 52 weeks a year, and never saying anything that's positive, never encouraging the people to win souls for Christ, to be involved in evangelism, to be involved in benevolence. Yes, I agree, we need to defend the truth. But folks, the growth pattern that is given here also says we need to be offensive. And I'm not using the word offensive there in the sense of offending people, but offensive in the sense of going forward with an offense if we're on the Lord's team. And so we need to know what our game plan is. Let's teach the truth. Let's stand against error. If error is taught, let's take the Bible and defend it. I have no problem with that. But our main purpose, folks, must be teaching the gospel and getting it out to the hearts of people. And I'm going to tell you something. If we'll do a better job of being on the offense and teaching the gospel and putting it into the hearts of people, we won't need to be involved as much in a defense. You coaches know as long as you've got the ball and you're on the offense, you don't have to worry too much about the defense. And one of the best ways to keep the other team from scoring is to keep the ball. In fact, I'll guarantee you that they won't score as long as you keep the ball. I'll guarantee you that a baseball team won't get any runs as long as you're up to bat. You just keep them in the field, you keep doing the offensive, and it'll take care of the other. And it'll work in the church, folks, if we'll do a better job of teaching the gospel and helping people to understand what real Christianity is about. We will at the same time be defending the truth. And then in verse 16, he says we need to supply the action. Verse 11, accept our differences, the different works that we have in the church. Verses 12 and 13, understand our challenges. Verses 14 and 15, know what our game plan is. We can have all of that and still not do anything if we don't get this verse 16 in. Verse 16 is the action, supply the action. Sometimes we do a better job talking than we do working. I think you hear it like this sometimes. We do a better job talking the talk than we do walking the walk. Verse 16 says, action. From whom the whole body. Now he's going back to verse 15 and picking up the word Christ. Christ is the head. There's the center. There's really the answer. Now he says, from Christ, the whole body. Notice that word whole, W-H-O-L-E, the whole body. Fitly joined together and compacted. Put together in unity. By that which every joint supplies. You think that maybe is building on verse 11 where there are the different works. Now he says everybody's got to do his part. Every joint supplying according to the effectual working, the measure of every part. In other words, according to the abilities that that person has. Maketh increase of the body unto the edifying of itself in love. Almost every lesson for the last few weeks we've said quality growth and quantity growth. There it is. What does he say there? He says every member is to be active. Nobody else can do your work for you. Help you? Yes. Do it for you? No. Every member according to his ability, number two. God has never expected us to do something we can't do. 2 Corinthians 8:12, if there be a willing mind, it is accepted according to that a man hath, and not according to that he hath not. according to our ability. And then he emphasizes the idea of doing this together. You look at what we're doing in the work here in this congregation, and it's because of everybody doing his own thing according to his ability and putting it together. That's why today will be successful. That's why we can continue to grow in the Lord's work, if we will see what that action is and be busy doing that action. And folks, I just have to pause long enough to say this. Let's don't wait till somebody else asks us to do something to be busy in the Lord's service. I want to get into this in detail tonight when we're talking about growing in benevolence. But there are a lot of things that you and I can do and need to do on a daily basis that we don't need to wait for someone to call us or hand us a card to make a visit or to do something, because we're Christians and there's an opportunity and we're about the Lord's business. We're just living it. We're just doing it. There's a place for organized work, but there's a place for unorganized work. Now, I didn't say disorganized. There's a place for unorganized growth. And we need to emphasize that. We need the quantity. We need the quality. And this pattern that's given here in Ephesians 4, in between, where he emphasizes doctrine in the first part and attitude in the second part, the last part, he tells us we need to understand our differences as far as opportunities are concerned. We need to accept our challenges. We need to know our game plan. And folks, above everything else, we need to supply the action. Get involved in the Lord's work. Are you active in the Lord's kingdom this morning, this day, this week? Maybe you're not even in the Lord's kingdom. You're not even in the church. What you need to think about this morning is becoming a Christian, getting on the team, being a part of that that grows up into Christ as the head. If you believe Jesus Christ is the Son of God and you're willing to be penitent, no reason but that you can confess the name of Christ and be buried with him in baptism for the remission of sins today. On the other hand, if you're already a Christian, are you active? Maybe there's a sense in which all of us need to respond to these challenges before us and just get more involved, but there could be some of you here this morning who need to come and ask for the prayers of the church, for forgiveness and strength to really be about the Lord's business. We need to grow up into him. Christ is the head. We are the body. We need to be active as a part of growing up into him. If you're not in him, if you're not growing up into him, and you need to come and ask for forgiveness or become a Christian, won't you come as together we stand and sing?
Come unto me, I am the way. Here can the loving call obey. Come, for he loves you so. Only a step, come, for he bled for you and died. He's the same love.